Welcome back.
I'm Paula Gordon, Dr. Charles Raison, Chuck, Dr. Stuart Kaufman. Stuart, have at it.
Okay. Well, Chuck, just before we started taping, you said something that it's not cheating to bring back up. We had a quick exchange in which we asked one another, somehow, do you believe that the mind's algorithmic?
Typical cocktail conversation.
Exactly.
Is the mind algorithmic?
That's a nice skirt. What do you think?
This is the way to, find a beautiful young woman.
Exactly.
They go crazy for that. And then there's a real come on. Okay.
Oh, man.
And I'm saying that at 68, and it still works.
It's a beautiful thing.
She said, I don't know what to do with it. Chuck, so what you said was, you think the mind's algorithmic. Mm-hmm. In this book that I've just written, Reinventing the Sacred, the really new material is two chapters. One is on the mind, and the other is on the possibility, improbable scientifically, but possible, I will argue, that the consciousness might be quantum mechanical, which was first put forward by Roger Penrose, for which he caught a lot of flack, to put it politely. I rather firmly think the mind is not algorithmic. You immediately said that you thought it was before I voiced, I guess we got that far.
Yeah.
Then you said something that's fascinating to me that I'd like to hear you speak about, which is that this is one of the things that separates Buddhist theory, practice, from Western. I want to say, if I may, a couple more things and then ask you. We are captured in post-1950 Western neuroscience, said I as a doc like you, in a computational model, starting, for example, with McCulloch and Pitts, who I was lucky enough to live with Warren McCulloch, in which neurons are firing one another into on-off states. Then we get the computer, and then the computer can carry out all of these complex calculations. And then we get the computational theory of the mind, and it goes in two directions. One is sort of the syntactic linguistic modeling pathway, and the other is essentially connectionism, in which there are things like dynamical steady states and basins of attraction that flow to them, and those become categories and category generalizations and all of that. I think that's all great, but I don't think, in fact, that's an adequate theory of mind. And you do, I would guess. So, where does all this lie?
Where does it lie with?
Well, first of all, where does it lie with when the Tibetans say "uh-uh"?
Yeah.
What are they saying?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I guess their version of algorithmic processes would be something like karma, cause and effect, because that's sort of an algorithm, right? They have a sense that in that way, what happens to a consciousness stream is related in extremely complicated ways, but in predictable law-like ways to actions in the past. So I guess I should clarify that they do have a sort of sense of algorithm, but I think where it really splits apart is, if the mind is an algorithm, then at the end of the day, it's an understandable phenomenon that arises from maybe they're instantiated physically, but these sort of basic yes-no kind of program things. Where they really split from the West, I think, is that they see that they have this belief that consciousness must arise from a previous moment of consciousness. And that, it sounds like a simple thing, but a lot comes out of that, because essentially then they have this sense that there is, they don't like words like substance, but that there is something inviolate about consciousness, that if you get down to the most subtle layers of consciousness that are almost nothing, zippo, that what you find is it's consciousness all the way down. That it's not, so maybe I misspoke when you first said that, because they may see algorithmic patterns in consciousness. I mean, I think their idea of action and reaction in terms of karma is in some way algorithmic, but they don't see it in a sense of what I think you and I mean when we talk about an algorithmic idea of the mind, for instance, that could be modeled on a computer, right? Mm-hmm. I think that they wouldn't see it that way. They would see that at the end of the day, there's something inviolate, or that at a certain point, consciousness, you don't get consciousness unless you got consciousness stream, consciousness stuff. Again, I bracket stuff, but that it's sure. not, they don't go for a full emergence, I suppose. And so, and
what do you mean, what did that last sentence mean?
A full emergence. That, you know, they would say that if you look at any compounded entity in the world, you can take it apart. And you can take it apart again, and you can take it apart again, and you can take it apart. So that is sort of like they have a sort of emergent flavor that way. They don't believe that entities are, they wouldn't believe in a soul or something like that, that there's some sort of identity that's inviolate, that is partless, that, you know, that, I mean, they've got thousands of pages of stuff taken that apart, you know. But my sense of their kind of final stance is that if you look at, ask the question, what is a being, a sentient being? That it's this not particularly separable, but that there's this very, very subtle energy that's always linked to a consciousness element. Mm-hmm. And that consciousness element, that's what makes something sentient. It's more like it's like a subtle vitalism, maybe. You know, mm-hmm. you take that element out, and you now have lost sentience. Whereas mm-hmm. I think a standard brand scientific explanation would say that sentience emerges from the sort of interaction patterns of non-sentient elements. And they would not go all the way to that. You know?
Where does it start? Is there a beginning of consciousness, or is it all for the them, universe has always been here?
For them, well, they believe in creation. I mean, they're very, the physics is right on line. Like this whole pocket universe idea and stuff would be right in line with them, this idea that there's multiple universes coming in and out of existence. They think most universes are empty most of the time. I mean, that's why they like this quantum mechanics stuff. But no, they think that consciousness is sort of eternal, essentially, you know, that you can't go back. Consciousness isn't created; it's not destroyed. So in that way, it's like I was reading the first part of your book. It's like the 24th, you know, element of the. They would add another element that is consciousness, basically. And mm-hmm. so, in that way, what I would mean by say an algorithmic idea that the mind is a sort of completely emergent thing that emerges like a. You know, that it is dependent, like, you know, Steven Weinberg thing, all the arrows point downward, but that it emerges from these smaller elements. They would say yes, in part, but there's always an infusion of something that's indissolvable. And mm-hmm. and that's their primary, that's my take and on like the primary difference. I mean, one of the reasons I think people are interested in Buddhism is I think that's a long way from a soul that's going to be plucked down, you know, taken away by God. It's much subtler. It's much more naturalistic. I mean, it's a naturalistic. They just believe that one of the sort of eternally naturalistic elements is consciousness.
And so, in that sense, they're dualists.
They're subtle dualists.
They're subtle dualists.
Mm-hmm.
They were a little before Descartes, but
yeah,
about 4,000 years.
Yeah. But I think they're subtle dualists, and you have a beer with some of these guys, and they'll split hairs with you. But that's what I think.
Bottom line is that they're kind of dualists.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and also I know just enough about this to know the notion of continuity of consciousness. Well, I think it rests on, you're the expert.
I'm not
expert than I am. There is the notion of mental causation.
Yeah.
Then there's the notion, then I think there is the notion that everything that occurs has a sufficient antecedent
yes.
cause. Therefore, if there's mental causation, it whatever happened had to have an antecedent cause.
Mm-hmm. And the same character.
And therefore, it has to go all the way back forever. And I think, well, I've been told that that's the root of the belief in reincarnation, mm-hmm. that consciousness can't begin and it can't stop
right.
because you had to have a first cause.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. I remember going to a neural network conference, which would seem improbable to both of you who know me a little bit. And over and over and over again, there were these people from all over the world who were qualified to say, I'm going to use the C word. So as you talk about consciousness, this isn't just Tibetan Buddhism. This is a very active conversation within the Western scientific community, as well as with people who have been practitioners of a spiritual tradition for thousands of years. Consciousness is a very big, inviting subject, yes?
Yeah.
Well, and the
especially to a psychiatrist and a theoretical biologist.
Well, and I also did philosophy of mind, yeah. Chuck, when I was younger at Dartmouth and at Oxford. When I was at Dartmouth and at Oxford, it wasn't polite to use the C word, okay? And in fact, it wasn't polite to use the C word, meaning consciousness, mm-hmm. 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Roger Penrose did is he brought it out of the closet. He might have gotten a lot of flack for it, but he did bring it out of the closet, and it's now okay to talk about consciousness. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was at Oxford, Gilbert Ryle had just written a book called The Ghost in the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
He was almost my tutor. He wasn't my tutor. But the basic argument was logical behaviorism. The behaviorists, you may recall, wanted to say, look, there's nothing going on in there, okay? It's just a correlation between inputs and outputs, okay?
Fortunately, Skinner is now dead.
Yeah.
He still has some
yeah.
followers, but he's
yeah.
dead.
Yeah. But essentially, they were trying to get rid of inner mental experience. States, like experiences. And there was the logical equivalent of that, essentially logical behaviorism, and Ryle wrote a book that was a famous book called The Ghost in the Machine,
mm-hmm.
which basically says that conscious experiences aren't real. And an astonishing number of philosophers of my generation, and before my generation a little bit, and then maybe 20 years after, are busy arguing that experiences are an illusion, not real, whatever. Which is, if I may be really simple in saying it, stupid. Because
yeah.
we're sitting here being conscious of what
we're having yeah. an experience. We're having that experience
yeah.
with
yeah,
Dr.
Sorry.
Stuart Kaufman and with Dr. Charles Raison, both of whom will be here when we return, and we trust you will be too.